Blog Talk Radio.
Mark the Rabbit Hole.
Broadcasting live from the fog of Neptune comes a rascally rabbit, exploring the unknown, traveling the astrological landscape, visiting secret worlds, dispelling the English language. So put on your bunny ears and hop down the rabbit hole with your host, Mark Matheny.
I have this feeling, man, because you know there's a handful of people actually run everything. That's true. It's provable. It's not a fuck. I'm not a conspiracy nut. It's provable. Handful, very small elite run and own these corporations, which include the mainstream media. I have this feeling who's ever elected president, like Clinton was, no matter what your promises you promise on the campaign trail, blah, 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 when you win, you go into this smoky room with the 12 industrialist capitalist scum fucks who got you in there, and you're in this smoky room, and this little film screen comes down, and a big guy in a cigar, roll the film, and it's a shot of a Kennedy assassination from an angle you've never seen before. It looks suspiciously off the grassy knoll. And then the screen goes up and the lights come up and they go to the new president. Any questions? Just what my agenda is. First we bomb Baghdad. You got it.
Time to awaken.
Good evening, campers. Welcome to another fun-filled day on the little blue marble here. We have breaking news here that I'll get to in a second. Tonight, our guest will be our good friend, David Two Crows Rutland. I forgot for a second. He's just released his fourth book, As the Crow Flies, Part 2, if I have that correct. And we'll be bringing him on here just in one second. Just across my news feed here, I just saw there was a terrorist attack, most likely, in France just a few minutes ago. A truck crashed into a crowd at a Bastille Day celebration. They're saying at least 60 dead now. So that's the state of things right now, I reckon. So our condolences definitely go out to those people there. We'll kind of keep our eye on that situation. We're gonna try to cover the entire history of humanity. So I'm gonna keep my announcements really short here. The last Sunday of the month, we have the Gathering of 1,000 Drummers at Alum Creek State Park. That is July, 31st, I believe it is. The next Rabbit Hole show will be 2 weeks from tonight, Thursday, July 28th. And you can find me at Two Fishes Astrology. And I have a Facebook page for Two Fishes Astrology. And you can find me at www.twofishesastrology.com. And I have blogs and stuff like that on there that are all searchable and everything. And I'm available for readings. I keep forgetting to mention that. So, so the title of tonight's show, I guess, the state of the world and how to fix it. So in less than 2 hours, we're going to wrap up the entire history of the human race and where we started and where we are now. And we're pretty much going to do it off the cuff, so this should be entertaining. So we want to bring on our friend David Two Crows. I believe he is. I can't find anything today.
Car, Two Crows.
There you go. Hey, yep. Well, you know,
I've been called Two Crows, and I've been called worse. So, you know, I like Two Crows. I'm going to go with that.
Yeah, so we have Two Crows and Two Fishes, so it's a standing room only show tonight. So.
That's right. Kind of like Noah's Ark, I guess. I don't know, but that's
it's a good part.
I'm
in a room with two cats also, and I have two dogs out in the living room. And we have two cats in a cage.
Wow. Okay. That's taking it too far, I guess. Well, yes, you know, it's quite a timely subject, I guess, talking about the state of the world, you know, and what's going on, and can we do anything to fix it? What can we try? And now this terrorist attack here, evidently a terrorist attack, like you say, in France. I've got my TV muted, but I'm watching CNN, and they're showing the same shots over and over again of crowds running and a bullet-ridden truck cab that was used, and just horrible stuff that goes on, and we're becoming so almost used to it now. You know, it's another terrorist attack. It's just you have to ask yourself, where is all this energy coming from? Why is all of this happening now? And the other thing I heard on this news report was that French citizens are by far the largest new recruits for ISIS. So they've allowed themselves access into France through these French nationals that are joining ISIS. And my mind goes, why would anyone want to join? But there has to be an attraction. There has to be some sort of something that they feel that they can get from being a member of that organization, you know. And I don't know. Are we coming to a point where are we looking at the fact that, you know, people just want to throw rocks at whatever the establishment is now, no matter who gets hurt and how it happens? And I don't know. It baffles me, but it is an actual part of our reality now. So I guess we need to examine that.
Yes. So it's like they're saying now, it's saying 73 dead and 100 injured, apparently. So, and I'm sure that those numbers will keep changing. It says the truck drove into the crowd at 60 to 70 miles per hour. And then I guess a gunman got out and started firing into the crowd on the seafront, popular tourist area. He was shot dead by police, but there are reports that there was an accomplice who had fled that had guns and grenades that were found in the truck. So, again, too early to really know who was behind this, I'm sure, but... we'll kind of keep an eye on, that, I guess. Goodness sakes. So yeah,
yes.
So that's a flurry of activity. So I mean,
You know, it makes me wonder if this is something that is happening organically, or if somebody's stirring the pot all the time to keep all of this anger. This terror and violence going. It's, you know, I don't know if it's, I don't think it's our natural state to be so violent towards one another. I know the people around the world in certain areas have felt divested of power, and they feel that this is the only way to fight back, perhaps, you know, to do something drastic like this. You know, the state of our world today is we don't fight wars on battlefields anymore. We fight them in the streets of cities like Paris. Like, you know, any town, anywhere, really, can become a battle zone, it seems like. And that's the most insipid and insidious kind of war is the one that just goes on and on and on. It doesn't have a declared enemy. It doesn't have a declared end it's or goals. It's just fear and violence and, you know, imposing that kind of, you know, violence and terror on innocent people. So... the whole nature of that has changed, and that's a very important part of our world situation today. Is how do we address that? You know, are we going to address it by by building walls and more security and arming our police like military, and sending soldiers overseas to fight in these areas where we think these terrorists are, sending drones out to kill people. And I don't know, it seems like we've fallen into some kind of weird kind of nightmare, endless war around the world. And that, you know, that has to be addressed if we're going to talk about bringing the world out of this dark times that we're in, where, you know, we're going to talk more about that, I'm sure, into some kind of enlightenment, into some kind of progressive, evolving human race where we don't keep falling back into our old violent ways and everything. But, you know, as I'm talking, I'm sure that some of your listeners are wondering, who is this guy, you know, you brought on tonight? What were his qualifications to talk about something like this? And really, I'm pretty much just like anybody else. You know, I've written a few books, like you said, put my feelings and my thoughts and my opinions into these books, and some people like them, so I'm grateful for that, you know. But really, you know, I'm just somebody who likes to examine things and think, and I've seen some history pass. You know, I'm not super old, but I've seen some things change in this country and in this world, and it concerns me, and I think we all need to start talking about it, working towards whatever it's going to take to start to correct the course that humanity has taken over these years and years. You know, you said we were going to talk about the history of the world, basically, and we can go back and start to see that we came from tribes, clans. We banded together for protection and safety, and, you know, to create a common culture. And these clans and tribes would clash with other clans and tribes. Sometimes they wouldn't so much clash as intermingle and intermarry and interbreed, and then you have larger clans and subclans. And it's we kind of form our societies in that way. You know, we have hierarchies of power. We have pods of people that we feel comfortable with, you know, that share common values. So as we have kind of grown and spread across the world, we've become, instead of clans and tribes, we've become more like states, nations, you know, and we have set up forms of government over ourselves in these various places. And most of them are hierarchical, with a leader on top, and then you've got the inner circle of that leader underneath them, and then advisors and counselors and, you know, just bureaucrats, administrators, and it kind of trickles down into the common person, you know. Sometimes those have been kingdoms, and sometimes they've been religiously led societies, and sometimes both, you know, as we've gone forward. But what we're talking about is basically how we are relating to one another, how we interact as human beings in those kind of organizations, states, nations, cities, you know, all the way down to neighborhoods and families. But what's the situation today? We have a lot of powerlessness. So some of the things we're going to be talking about tonight are, how can we get back our feeling of being empowered? How can we start to feel like there is a difference we can make in the world? Here in this country, we've just gone through, and are going still through, an election process where we've seen a very popular candidate acquiesce his campaign and give his support to Hillary Clinton, which has given some people who were supporting Bernie Sanders a bad taste in their mouth for the system. You know, I think that the people who were backing him were mostly young people too, but a lot of other people. But there was a kind of a groundswell movement of the millennials to back Bernie Sanders, you know, that he was going to be a candidate that could make a difference. And now they've seen the way that politics works. You know, it's compromise, it's power broking. It's, you know, you have to make sacrifices to get your party in power and things like that. So the game rules are out now, you know, so we can see them more clearly. I remember when I was growing up, politics seemed a little more cut and dry. You know, it was like you had the candidates running, and, you know, maybe they didn't do everything they said they were going to do, but at least you could rely on them to represent a certain point of view when they got in office, and now I don't know what that what that's going to mean, what that looks like, because this is such a crazy political race. But anyway, I've spoken enough. So Mark, you want to add anything or chime in?
Yeah, well, I just thought let's go through every day in history. Let's start with Thursday 1 AD.
I remember it well. Yes.
What is it, analyze every day?
Yeah, it's a partly cloudy day with
a... It was, yes, it was a cool crisp morning. So I think when we're looking at, you know, so not that I'm that old, not that I'm 2600 years old or whatever, but you know, I think it civilization started off with, you know, there was lots of freedom. Your whole day was free. You didn't, you know, you didn't have to pay bills and income tax and get your car license renewed. And, you know, your only fears were your immediate neighbors and any wildlife that would be in the area, and or, you know, finding enough food to survive. And so as for something out of the first 2,000 years. So
right.
So but just I think gradually as people found that they were able to use fear and manipulation to gain power and to control people and things, and as that progressed, I mean, I don't even know what the tipping point would be. I mean, you know, we could make a guess in our lifetime what the tipping point would be, but I mean, it's just gotten now to where there are kind of no boundaries, and you have to fear, you know, they try to instill fear of, you know, people, and, you know, North Korea's got a nuke, and this country's got the atomic capabilities, and it's so much more complicated now. And so I think people have, has figured out that, you know, you can create and manifest fear and or enemies when there are none, and you can use that to control the masses. Now, they're not going to control everyone, and they know they're not going to control everyone, but you don't have to control everyone. You just have to, you know, that the herd is going to follow along with whatever propaganda is put out there. And then, you know, I'm sure they figure they're just the rest. They just try to keep, they don't have to keep them controlled. They just have to keep the rest of the people just scared enough that they don't really step too far out of line. Or if they go run off in the woods by themselves, then that's fine, because then they're
right.
Not really,
they're not
rebel rousers.
Yeah, they're not part of the equation anymore. You're right. The art of mind control or manipulation is an old one, you know, and it's refined itself quite a bit as we've moved forward. You know, the first it was the carrot and the stick, you know. You're going to go to hell if you misbehave, and you're going to get a reward in heaven if you behave yourself, you know. And it's all the same thing with the law. You know, if you step out of line and you break a law, you're going to either, you know, back in the day, you get your head cut off or get stoned or, you know, have your hand cut off or something more barbaric. But now it's you have your freedom taken away, and you're put into a whole new world in prison. And, you know, that's the threat that we have over us. You know, we're still, even though as modern as we think we are and as advanced as a society as we think we are, we still have men with guns threatening us to stay in line, you know?
Right.
So it's the same old threat, only in a different guise. And, you know, how many laws do we need to hold us in line? I mean, you have your basic social contracts that we all make. You know, I won't steal your stuff. I won't go after your spouse. You know, we won't kill each other. that kind of thing, you know, the basically the Ten Commandments in a nutshell, kind of a social contract. You can move it on to a little more sophistication with the Magna Carta. You know, that was where the noble families began to get a little more power from the king, and the big, basically, I guess, the beginning of the rights of the people, the common person, that came around in the French revolutions and the American Revolution, as successful or unsuccessful as they were. But those kind of social contracts that we have among each other, because we are social beings, we live in groups together. So those are the things that we create among ourselves. But it seems like there's just this plethora of laws and law enforcement, and you get to lawyers, and you know, you get to the point where you don't know if you're breaking a law or not sometimes, just and you can sure find yourself quickly on the wrong side of all that. And does that serve society? I don't know. We've kind of turned a blind eye to the erosion of our freedoms, and we've compromised them because there's, you know, the threat of somebody attacking us. You know, like you said, it makes a great tool to take away our freedoms. So we have to ask ourselves, at what point do we want to take back those freedoms and give up some of that imagined safety? Because, you know, we're really not that safe anyway. When we bargain away our freedom like that, we think we are, but anything can happen to anyone at any time. That's just the way life is. So but that seems to be part of the situation we're facing in this world, is a overly controlling hierarchical government that has its best interest in mind by staying in power, versus the average person. You know, I think 99%, I don't, that 99-98% of people don't really want to hurt anybody, you know, don't really go out of the door every morning going, you know, who can I kill today? How can I hurt somebody today? We're all just trying to get along. We're all just trying to have the same basic core of, you know, provision of food, shelter, you know, a little extra spending money, whatever. You know, we don't want to hassle anybody. But there's an element that wants to stir us up, that wants to turn us against each other, that wants to create this fear and distrust and these racial and social fractions that we are currently facing. So we have to be very careful, you know, that we don't walk down a road out of safety and find ourselves the prisoners of our own desire for safety and security.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, just look at how much money we spend, you know, in a lifetime with, you know, home insurance, apartment insurance, car insurance, pet insurance, health insurance. I mean, how much of your money is given away by, just even add in how much of your tax dollars go towards military black ops invading other countries. Mm-hmm. What I mean, just how much money do you spend in your lifetime for the perception, and it is only a perception, of safety? That none of these people, nothing, your local tax dollars go to a police department and the fire department, everything. And I'm not saying we shouldn't have those things at all, but I'm saying just look at the whole picture. How much money do we spend in a lifetime giving it to someone who offers protection but really can't? I mean, it's
absolutely, yep.
You know, it's nice to be able to call the police if someone's breaking into your house. But in the long run, I mean, a lot of times it just ends up them trying to track down the bad guy after he's gone. Or what's going, or what, let's take France this instance. It's, you know, I'm sure they've had tons of military all over the streets since, you know, the attack there in Paris last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they still weren't able to protect those people today.
Yeah.
Protection is selling a state of mind, and it's usually being sold by people who really, you know, can't provide it. And really, no one can provide it. You don't know when a meteor is going to come land on your head, or a tree is going to fall down, or you're going to fall off a ladder, or whatnot. I mean, what, like you said, how much of our liberty, freedoms, and money are we willing to give up for a protection that can't really be offered by anyone?
Right. Yeah. You know, and the problem, one of the problems is too, you know, and Dwight Eisenhower tried to warn us about this, is the growth of the military-industrial complex. And what that is it's a marriage of industry and military. There's so many weapons that are being built, you know, and so many just the world is armed to the teeth, you know, and when we have enough for ourselves, we export it to other countries. And it's a growth industry. And the reason that it's a problem is because it begins to influence the way our elected officials vote and think, and it brings us more and more into a state of what we have today, which is basically eternal tension, eternal war. It could break out any time. You never really feel safe. You know, you got to have more guns. You got to have more missiles. You got to have more. You know, when the Cold War was going on, it was great because we had Russia to fight against. You know, oh, we got to escalate more because Russia's escalating more, and they're escalating more because we're escalating more. Eventually, we outspent them, and that's how we won the Cold War, is we just spent them into the poorhouse. They couldn't afford to keep up with us anymore. But once that ended, what do? You know, you still got this burgeoning industry and weapons and arms, and so you're going to go out and maybe arm some guerrillas somewhere and kind of stand on the sidelines and, you know, maybe they can fight your war for you. And we saw that happen in Central America and in South America and other places around the world. Afghanistan was one where we decided to arm, you know, Osama bin Laden and his crew, you know, to fight against the Russians there. But that backfired on us because, you know, we gave them training and weapons, and they turned on us when the Russians were gone. And so you're not going to win the war by bombing everybody or arming everybody to the teeth. You're not going to win peace that way. I mean, you're not going to make the world a safer place. You're going to make it a more dangerous place. And I believe that there are people who don't give a damn about that they only want their industry to continue. You know, they probably have written off human race as just warlike, and, you know, we're just going to keep throwing spears and weapons and guns at each other, you know, until we're all dead, you know. And but in the meantime, they're just going to make a profit off of it. I like to think a little differently than that. I like to believe in the potential of the human race. I like to believe that we have a better nature inside of us than just that, that we're being more or less pushed into that in some ways by the military-industrial complex, you know. Boeing Industries, you know, they're in Seattle. They make some of the best weapons for our U.S. military. They also make planes, and I saw a commercial for them just the other day, you know, where they were talking about 2 years from now. I don't know if you've seen this, but it's like this future with, you know, people flying around the world, and, you know, and it's several hours, and it's all very hopeful. But they're responsible for a huge portion of the death and misery that goes on in this world every day, you know. So how can you put a nice pretty face on your company and postulate a great future for humanity when you're contributing all of that, you know, all those arms and all of that blood to our history? You know, I don't know, but that's the threat that comes from the military industrial complex is a great one, I think, you know. And we need to dismantle that somehow. We need to unmarry our representatives from their relationship with that and start to really examine it, really make them accountable for what they do. You were talking about black ops. That's another one. You know, who knows how many billions of dollars are tucked away in some secret bank account that can get used at a moment's notice by something we never even knew about, much less voted on, or even our representatives didn't know about it. You know, somebody gets taken out in some country by some super weapon that we created. We are, you know, is that the American way? Is that what we've really become? Is like the paid assassins of the world? You know, I don't believe that. I don't believe that that's what we should be doing.
Right, agreed. So it's at some point a long time ago, it was decided that we were not able to think for ourselves and didn't know what was best. So we had to have people take care of us, so to speak, and look out for us and provide, you know, offer to provide safety and protection. And you know, it's just escalated from that part. And so now it's just, it's always someone selling you something that they can't really provide. You know, like I said, it's we need to have police and firemen and military to some extent and everything. But at a point, it's the same message. It's one of the messages that you see in some of the organized religions, and you see it a lot in politics and other things. And I think getting to a bigger point is that you can't fix anything. You can't fix stuff for yourself. You have to go, you have to go to church to talk to this guy, to talk to God for you. You have to hire a lawyer to go into the courtroom to talk to the judge for you. You have to, it's the same message over and over again. You are weak and powerless. You can't do anything yourself. And you have to go through a third person who is a human, a surrogate, to speak to whomever or whatever is deemed to be more powerful than you. So at what point do we stand up and say, I'm not listening to outside authority anymore? You know, I used to be one of those people that blamed everybody else. You know, I would always, this person kept me from doing this, and this person. And, you know, then I just got to the point. It was like, you know what? I allowed all that to happen.
Yes. Yep.
So I'm not going to say I don't ever complain about people ever, but ultimately, when it comes down to it, no one else has screwed up anything for me. I've allowed things to happen, or willingly gone along to learn lessons or whatnot. But that's kind of the mentality you go through. I mean, it's even, I don't want to learn how to fix a car, really, because I don't really have the time, or to fix plumbing or whatnot. But that's the mentality you're taught, kind of is, well, you have to go find a plumber to do that. You have to go find a mechanic to do that. You have to go get a good lawyer. You have to go get it's the same message over and over again. You're nothing and you're insignificant. And so you always have to go to some outside authority, some outside specialist or some. Now, I want there to be, bomb specialists and stuff. If I ever ran across a bomb, I wouldn't want to try to figure out which wire to cut. But
the
it's
blue
just,
wire. Cut the blue wire.
No, it's the red wire.
Oh, no.
But at some point, it's like, where, when do we turn off our TV and turn off the politicians and turn off what our government officials are saying, and just kind of, how do we get back and reclaim, our own ability to heal ourselves and to fix things? And not that I want to spend every day fixing every little thing in the world myself. But, but it's just, that's just the recurring message is, oh, no, you can't do that. You have to go to somebody else to do that.
Yeah.
You can't
right.
just go get in your car and drive. You have to go down to the DMV and you have to have them issue you a government license. And you can't just be a two people in a relationship. You have to go down to the courthouse and they have to give you a piece of paper from the government saying, and you can't go to, you can't just walk into a courtroom and defend yourself. You have to hire an attorney who can then talk to the judge for you in the proper terms. it's across the board, just a continual mental beatdown.
Right. Hey, my dog can't even be a dog without a license, right? He needs a dog license
exactly.
to be a dog. So,
exactly.
All these years, I thought he was just fine, but no, he needed a license. So, but yeah, you're
a
right. You know, and
for my fish. You remember the Monty Python skit?
Yep, good old Monty Python. They should show that in school. But anyway,
yes, they should.
It's true, you know. We really have only ourselves to ultimately blame for the situations we find ourselves in. You know, if we feel divested of power, it's because we've willingly given it away. We've allowed others, in the absence of our own voices and our own opinions, to push their own agendas forward, figuring, okay, well, if you're not going to say anything that you want me to do, I guess I'll just do whatever this person tells me to do or whatever I think I should do, you know. And we end up, instead of having representatives, we pretty much have leaders telling us what they're going to do, you know, instead of us saying, hey, look, we want you to do this. It might be part of our modern life that contributes to that, because we do have so many distractions and so many multitasking things going on in our life. We really don't sit down and go, you know, tonight I'm gonna write my congressman or my senator and let them know that I'm out here and this is what I want. And, you know, you could do that in smaller communities. I guess you could do that when the country was younger and not so spread out and lived a different lifestyle. But now we seem to be so distracted and seem to be so disenchanted or disillusioned about our government too, you know, the way that it's supposed to work and the way that it really works are way two different things. So looking at that, we can kind of feel like, what's the use? You know, those guys are bought off, they're bought and paid for, you know, we should throw them all out of office and just, you know, I don't know what, start over again, either a reform or revolution or whatever it takes to get our country back. But we're the ones who made it that way in the first place, ladies and gentlemen, because we let it happen. It was a long, slow slide down the slippery slope, but we're waking up. I think we're finally to a point where we've had enough. We really realize how out of touch we've become with those that are in power over us and the system that's supposed to work the way it's supposed to work, but it doesn't. So the blinders have come off, the gloves have come off, and a lot of us are mad as hell, but we really don't know the next steps to take. Are we mad at each other? Are we mad at the Republicans? Are we mad at the Democrats? Are we mad at the police? Are we mad at, you know, our society that has fractured itself so much? Or what do we do? You know, how do we find unity in all this? How do we find a common voice to tell those people up on Capitol Hill, this is what the people want? America is so diverse in our opinions, it seems that, you know, you've got gun owners that want gun rights. You've got people who are concerned about guns wanting guns to be banned, or some guns to be banned in this country. And that kind of conflict really only serves those who want to keep us powerless, because we're easy to rule that way. You know, they can just push a button over here and, oh, okay, so we're all focused on this issue or this division among us and we're squabbling and everything. And then they can kind of, you know, move forward with whatever they want to move forward with to keep us a little more oppressed. And so at one point or another, we're going to have to become what I know we can be, which is loving, caring people who will not hate one another just because somebody says we should, who have come to a point where we can see through it now. Little hazy, yeah, we still get distracted, but it's beginning to become thin now, the tricks that they use. So I have hope for that, but it's going to take us struggling. It's going to take us facing some very ugly things that we need to face that have kind of swept under the rug. You're seeing racism coming out now, and that's very ugly, you know, and not, we used to just, people who want to go back to the good old days, I never trust them, because the good old days were never that good, you know?
Right. They're only good for a certain percentage of people. Yeah, I'm like that too. It's like, I have this emotional, watery side that pines for, you know, childhood memories and things like that. But, you know, we've got to move forward. Time spent talking about how great it was when we were, I mean, that's fun to reminisce once in a while, but that can't be a way to run a world. It's, well, you know, 34 years ago, it was, you know, I agree.
Right.
Things were simpler then, but that's not going to get us out of the hole here. So, you know,
exactly.
I mean,
you know,
go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, it's because Mom was in the kitchen and, you know, all the colored people were where they needed to be, you know, and the white people were where they needed to be. And, you know, everyone went to church and, you know, all the gay people were in the closet and, you know, everything was nice and neat and looked good on the surface to some people. You know, it was a good homogenous society, but there was a lot of oppression, a lot of, you know, kind of injustices going on at the time, you know, that we didn't see, but they were there and now they've just become much more apparent. You know, I think Martin Luther King would kind of think this was all a setback in a way, because we have not, we're still judging each other by the color of our skin, not by the content of our character, like he said. So we have a long way to go. You know, we still have a long way to go, but we're going to go there together, whether we like it or not, you know, and I'd rather us turn our attention to where it's going to do the most good, which is examining our leadership, examining, taking our power back, you know, that we've willingly given away or maybe had stolen from us a little bit, I don't know, but through manipulation. But it's all about getting ourselves empowered and then having a responsibility that comes along with that power. And that responsibility is to, first of all, guard ourselves from ever being fooled again, and also to be more participatory in our lives, our own lives, you know, not just let things just kind of coast. I know everyone's not into politics or, you know, all those things, but there are very many smart people out there, very many passionate people who could contribute a lot to that. I was thinking, you know, and this has been brought up before by Neil deGrasse Tyson, I believe, you know, the astronomer.
Yeah. Yeah.
He said, when you look at government, where are all the scientists? Where are the engineers? Where are the physicists? Where are the thinkers, you know, that don't have this agenda? You know, we have a lot of lawyers. We have a lot of, you know, professional politicians, but we don't have a lot of those kind of people there. And those are the people who can help shape the future. Those people who have visions and ideas and want to do more than just, you know, sit around and collect a paycheck for showing up. You know, there's things to be done in this world that could bring us all together. We had a wonderful moment when right after 9/11, when George Bush walked out onto that stage, he could have done a number of things. We know he wasn't going to now because he had a script, but
right.
That moment, the world's eyes were turned on us, and we had sympathy. We had the attention of almost every nation. You know, we could have said, you know what, we were attacked today by terrorism, and it was horrible and something that we all feel pain for. Now, what are we going to do? Are we going to... We can unite together. We can begin to make sure that justice is there for everybody. We can make sure that provision is made for everybody, that an opportunity is made for everybody to grow, to become together, you know. But instead it was like, nope, we have the axis of evil. Like, what does North Korea have to do with what just happened? What does Iran, you know,
right,
an agenda right there? That was their enemies list right there. We saw right there who they were going to go after for the next 10, 20 years or whatever. They wanted to name their enemies now because that was all part of it too. But those are the kind of moments that I believe America can still be great in this world. You know, we walk around the world right now like some sort of policeman, and we look out over our interests and our allies' interests, and we send smart bombs and drones to do our killing for us, you know, and in return we get these kind of things like happened in France or 9/11 or some of the other things that have happened. I don't know. We have theories on 9/11, don't we? Because this is the rabbit hole show, so. Yes. But anyway, we can still be the world's greatest nation because we want to be a part of a world community, not just the world's policeman that walks around being the superpower. You know, I really wish we would get over this whole idea of superpowers anyway, because all that does is create competition and escalation, and just the world isn't some schoolyard, you know, where you have the biggest bully running the show. It's a community, and we all have to feel each other's needs and each other's and grow from each other's resources too. We sat the other day and learned about a culture that we'd never heard of before at a drum circle, the Senegal culture, you know, and it was wonderful. It was great to learn about that and to think that people are living maybe an entirely different kind of life across the world, but they're people too, you know. They've got their hopes, their dreams, their problems to struggle with every day, you know. And I would just like to see us not label each other so much, not come at each other so much from a point of, you know, wanting what you have or envying what you have, or, you know, put the push and pull that we feel with these geopolitical boundaries. We're human beings, you know, and the last time I checked, the world didn't have any physical borders. We drew those on a map, and then we just kind of judge each other from there. So the next phase, I hope, for the human race is to grow out of this juvenile stage that we're in now. It's a dangerous stage too. It's kind of like early adolescence when you got all these hormones running and you don't know what to do with them. But there's got to come sometime a point of maturity where we stop repeating these patterns, these risings and fallings that we keep doing, you know, with all of the empires that we build and fall apart. It's not working, folks. It's not working. And it's, even now it's not working, as you can see. So what's that going to take? Well, it's going to take a lot of dedication from a lot of people. And whether that happens overnight, like some kind of great awakening, enlightenment, or whether we have to struggle through some real tough crap, you know, that we have to deal with, some very hard, harsh lessons that we need to learn, that remains to be seen, I guess. That's just our next choice we make. So, but I believe it's possible. I don't want to come on the show and be like all doom and gloom. I really do believe that there's the better nature of the human race can triumph over what we currently have. We have to break our chains, though. You know, we have to, even our mental chains, the ones that we keep ourselves locked in. But there's a great chance to do that.
Yes, I agree, and. You know, a lot of, you know, a lot of this goes back to, I think, belief systems. And I think at times we have to look and see, you know, what are our belief systems? We all have belief systems that, you know, we cling to, and well, it's like, where exactly did they come from? God love our parents, all tried to do, you know, most of them were good people and tried to do a good job raising us and everything. But, you know, a lot of our belief systems are just things that were parroted to our parents. Our parents parroted it back to us. We get things parroted to us in school. And those become, you know, our social mores, you know, what is crazy, what is not, what is real, what is not. And then anybody who puts theories outside of that box, we just write off as crazy. But, you know, where do these belief systems come from? If you want to go back, I mean, who decided that 2 + 2 = 4? You know, if you want to get ridiculous about it, but really, why is 2 + 2 = 4? Why is 2 + 2 = 4? Here's a typical discussion I end up in. Something happens, I spew my conspiratorial theory. But then it's like, you know, and they all say, well, this and this, you know, following the logic, this is the money trail. This is the, you know, people connected to it. And then I get stuff back like, well, that's crazy. And all I get back is they don't have any evidence or any facts that what I'm saying is crazy. All I hear back is their belief system that has been parroted to them over and over again their entire life. They don't have any knowledge that, you know, and the same thing too, you know, I post UFO and Bigfoot pictures on my Facebook page, and immediately within 10 seconds, somebody goes, Photoshop. But those same people, when I say, well, the government lies and the media lies, I get arguments back. How come some guy making $34,000 a year can afford a smartphone that has enough apps that he can Photoshop a crappy picture to make it look like a UFO, but a media agency that has $42 trillion at its disposal and is paid by mega corporations to influence and create fear and propaganda and have the backing of armies, police departments, and militaries and world leaders and all the equipment in the world at their disposal, why is that crazy to think that they would fake something?
Right. It's almost like they just can't, it's over their head so much that they can't even imagine that kind of manipulation. But I'll tell you, it's been going on for quite a while. And one of the things that kicked it into higher gear is when we discovered about the ways that we can psychologically influence people beyond those two methods we were talking about earlier, the carrot and the stick. When you can start to mess with people's sense of reality, when you can start to pull their inner little strings and push their buttons. Hypnotism was a big one, you know, that when we found out that people could be hypnotized and maybe not made to be something opposite from what they are, but they can certainly become more suggestive to suggestions and implanted impressions and things like that. So that I'm sure that was seized upon right away. Advertising does it all the time. You know, they want us to buy something, so they will present it in ways that hit us at an emotional, even primitive level, make us want what they're selling. So why is government any different? They would hit us at an emotional level and make us want what they want to have happen. You know, they want to present us with images, words, combinations of words, presented in certain ways that influence us. And, you know, weapons of mass destruction, repeat something often enough and it becomes a mantra and you begin to believe it. So, yeah, definitely we have to watch for manipulation from individuals all the way up to governments, because that's how those kind of people work, to make us become numb and make us become dumb and make us become, you know, their willing pawns in whatever game they want to play. You know, I've said before, we all manipulate things in our own way sometimes, you know, in relationships. I'll do this for you if you do this for me. That's a social kind of exchange there. It's pretty much on the surface. But when you get into people playing mind games with you, agencies, governments, whatever you want to call it, setting things up to look real, but they're not, just so that they can move their agenda forward, that's evil. That is evil manipulation, and that needs to be exposed.
I think the first step to righting this ship and to fixing some of the things in the world is, I think, you know, kind of looking on a, you know, on a personal level, looking at our own belief systems. Why do I believe this? Why do, you know, sometimes we have like post-traumatic stress responses to things that happened, you know, earlier in our life or something, and we'll bring those back up, and it's like, you know, I can't go to that place because something bad happened one time, or
mm-hmm.
I can't associate with this person, or I can't watch this TV show or whatever. And it's like, we may need to kind of look at our triggers too, I think. Like, is my response or reaction to something fitting, or was it like a one-time response that I needed? You know, I mean, I think we've all almost gotten hit by a car in a parking lot before, where, you know, we stepped out into the road or the car wasn't looking or something, but I don't think that means we need to be afraid of all, you know, four-door sedans the rest of our life. You know, we should probably not.
Right.
We should probably not make a habit of stepping in front of them, but, you know, where do our, you know, because I just, some days I just sit there and it's like, you know, because I'll pick up on this programming and stuff too, and I'll get, okay, oh, you know, yada yada, this person or that thing or whatever, and then I'll sit there and I'll go like, what, where did that come from?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why would I, you know, what, it's, and you know, the way the media is putting out, you know, the race relations and stuff now. And it's like, I just try to look at stuff and, you know, like just try to be conscious for a minute and look, are my responses to things really, are they really accurate? Are they a reflection of, you know, something that happened one time to me? Or was it a recurring thing? Or am I just parroting something that I've heard a lot of people say? And,
right.
And at a point,
yeah.
It's, I think that's the first thing to look at. Our, you know, we all have, we're all prejudiced. We all have prejudices, you know. I don't like onions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we all have...
I like onions.
How dare you? So see, but you know, then
onions.
That applies to groups of people and places and things. And at a point, we have to look and say, you know, why do I not like? Is there a real reason I don't like this, or is there a real reason I don't like a certain person or a certain place, or, you know, has anything really bad happened to me there? Or am I just like, you know, the media says I should be afraid.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. Yeah. These conditioned responses that we have in life, and they, you're right. They go all the way back to our childhood, what our parents thought. You know, there's a point in your life, I think everyone reaches, where you begin to go, you begin to question what your parents told you, you know, and I guess that's the teenage rebellion. You want to find your own way, you know, so heck with what you said, mom and dad, you know, I'm going to do this and I'm, you know, you don't understand me, what my world's like now, you know, and all these things. But as you grow older too, you kind of see, well, they had some things, you know, you can see your parents more as just people who were, like you said, they're just trying to do their best, you know, and maybe they didn't do the greatest job, but they were programmed and influenced by things they went through, and they were just trying to pass on what they thought was important, you know. So they drilled that into your head, your tiny little head, and you know, some of it may have taken, some of it not. But I, for one, I consider myself lucky that I wasn't forced into some religious point of view. They didn't really go one way or the other, so I was kind of free to make my own conclusions about that. I'm not a recovering Catholic like I know so many people are from the damage that happens, or evangelical or any kind of fundamental religious belief that you don't really align with later in life, but you feel compelled to follow. So, you know, it does a lot of damage and you have to unlearn a lot of things. And yeah, you're going to be spooked and scared by things you don't even understand, or have that little voice in your head tell you things that, you know aren't true. But you can awaken to that. You can begin to not be influenced by that, and you can see it for what it is. When you start to see it for what it is, you understand it. You know, you've already broken that chain and started to repair that damage. So, yeah, you're right. I think that's the first thing that we all really need to do, is to look at ourselves and go, you know, why am I reacting the way that I am, and choosing the sides that I might choose in a particular point of view, when maybe I'm not seeing the bigger picture, you know, and what's going on here with all of this. So that self-awareness, that self-knowledge is very important, and something that we, in the metaphysical community, we like to say, you know, be the change you want to see in the world. So that's part of it too, is coming around to that realization that conflict in me makes me more susceptible to conflict out in the world. And if I'm free from that conflict, I can be more of an agent for a more moderate point of view or a more compassionate point of view out there. You know, I'm not saying that's going to save the world, but it's a good start to at least get us a better perspective on what's really happening than what we just soak up from the media and the opinions of others.
Very good. So I think we have a someone else is going to join us here. Have our producer and the creator of the network, Iggy Garcia.
Oh my.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Hey.
Good. How's it going,
good
gentlemen?
Good,
bro. Good. I've been listening. It's been interesting and fascinating to listen to your point of view, so I really appreciate it. It's pretty cool.
Well, thanks for joining us, and we're getting, I think we're kind of working our way into maybe what are some of the fixes and solutions, I think, to get kind of out of the quagmire we're in.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you guys don't know, in Nice, France, Mark, we talked about this about Nice, France one time. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, I very beginning of the show. What had happened there.
Yeah, they got attacked today, and it was kind of weird because I was like, man, we just, Mark and I talked about Nice, France for some reason. I don't know why we brought it up, but I have to look. I got to remember what we actually were talking about, but it was, I posted that on my Facebook page too as one of my cover pages a while back. And I'm thinking, man, that is bizarre.
Yeah. I mean,
Were you able to, like, determine anything from any charts or anything you've had a chance to look at?
I haven't really had a... I'll try to pull up a chart here while we're talking. Let's see. So, yeah, so, I mean the moon is in Scorpio right now, and... the sun is opposite Pluto as well. That Dallas thing last week. So, I mean, you know, there's that energy out there right now, and things are ramping up towards the, Republican convention next week in Cleveland. So there's an awful lot of most of the planets are in water and earth right now. So it's very emotional, kind of introverted. We just now have a couple things into Leo, so it's starting to add a little bit more energy to things. But it's just very heavy, intense energy out there right now. And so it's hitting on an individual's chart or the chart of a city. I went through a little thing where I posted the chart for Dallas, Texas on my wall last week. And, you know, there was similar things going on last week, similar transits to the city of Dallas chart as there was on November 22nd, 1963, when Kennedy was assassinated. So cities have charts too, just like people and countries, and so pretty bizarre stuff.
Well,
yeah.
Well, I think you guys are doing a great job, and you know, it's nice to listen and just be a listener sometimes. So I'll let you guys get back to your conversation, and I'll keep listening.
Okay. Thanks for popping in.
Thank you. Yeah,
all right,
thank
guys.
You. It's
appreciate it.
Okay, cool. Wow. It's always good to hear from Iggy. He's, of course, he and I and Adriana are on Mondays on the Blog Talk Radio Network and have some interesting spirited conversations as well, sometimes along these lines, sometimes along different lines. But it all concerns us now, you know, and I think that's why we tend to be so focused on it, is because this is important stuff. You know, this isn't just trivial who's dating who in Hollywood kind of stuff. This is life and death. This is our future, you know, and a lot of our future comes from the past, but also comes through us and how we create the next moment together or alone, but, you know, as a group too. I know that we get into conspiracy theories sometimes, and it's hard not to sometimes feel that way. Like, this could all be set up somehow, that it just seems to be like too much going on. And right after something happens, there's a push for this. And right after this happens, there's a push for that. So
right,
we don't know what's,
and that
it's
all
like
comes
we don't know
right
what
after the Bilderberg meetings let out.
Right. So you wonder if there's a game.
Look at the events we've had since the Bilderberg meeting ended. All the stuff that's happened since then.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and the Trilateral Commission. And there actually was a study or a book of some sort called The American Century that is more or less a playbook for what you're seeing today with a more empowered America going around the world, establishing territories in the Middle East and other places. It doesn't matter that it causes, you know, death and destruction and disruption of all sorts of political boundaries, and it's all this rage and anger. But it's the way that they want it to be, you know. And we're almost being set up to be the fall guy too, you know, because at the same time we're being torn apart from the inside. We're being weakened. We're being turned against each other, you know, and our economy is being shipped out, you know, all the jobs that have gone overseas. You know, it's the globalist agenda, you could say, too, to kind of make a worldwide government or situation where we're all working for the man, and the man is just one little cadre of people up there that are controlling everything. Whether that'll ever work or not, I don't know, but it certainly does cause a lot of drama and tension around the world if that's what's going on. Like I say, I can't believe that ordinary people we're doing this on our own. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm a little naive. Maybe this is something that has to happen. And I suppose that's another point of view too. Maybe we have the world that we need right now. You know, maybe there aren't so many problems. It's just, this is what we need to see right now. This is what we need to go through right now in order to evolve, to become the next level of human being. I don't know. Maybe solving problems and trying to find solutions is part of the problem. Because there's always another thing that's going to pop up. Somebody's the problem. Those people over there are the problem. We got to wipe them out. But no, they're the problem. They got to wipe us out. So where does it end? I don't know. We really have to look at ourselves as a whole, you know, not just we're Americans and the heck with the rest of the world. We can't live like that anymore. Yeah, you know, we're an interconnected world. We're interconnected in so many ways, not just politically, economically, but even on our phones, even on the internet, even our relationships. You know, I know people around the world through that, you know, and I care. And when something goes on over there, I'm like, you know, I know somebody over there. It's not like some distant country where it doesn't matter. There's potential in that, I think, for us to find connection and to share information and to kind of break the spell that we've been put under of being us against them so much. We still have some things to pass through, you know, but I believe that we can do it. I believe we can do it. And as I said, you know, it may take decades of struggle, or it may just be, you know, we just all say, we've had enough of this crap, you know, and right. And see what happens then. But anyway, back to you.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, so, you know, when kind of looking at ways, yeah, I know it looks overwhelming, so it's like, okay, how do we fix everything? But, you know, I think what starts is if we don't, each one of us doesn't have to save the world. I think all it takes is just if everyone or a few people on every street, you know, just start taking care of the little area around them, you know, just to pitch in and make your home a little better, make your workplace a little better, make your street a little better. If everybody did that, if just a small percentage of people did that, hey, there's a lot of people that don't like either of the top two picks for president this year. Well, and a lot of people are not going to vote, and I agree that the whole thing looks and smells 100% rigged. But you know what? I'm gonna go vote third party on a bunch of stuff. You know, at least have your vote, even if you don't like any of the third party people, put your vote out there that says, I want another option. That's
right.
You know, I reject the top two options. Give me another option. So,
I like that.
With your money, too. You vote with your money, too. There are, you know, when we've said this a million times, but there are local farmers markets, there are local clothes shops, there are local places you can get your groceries, there are, you know, whenever you can. The enemy of freedom is conformity. Whenever you can add or provide different opinions and diversity to your surroundings, you're helping add to the freedom for everyone. Because when we get down to, we just have Walmart, we just have Amazon, and we just have BP by your gas, and you know, when we just have one option of everything, there's less freedom for everyone. When you spread your money around to local businesses whenever, and then I know you can't do it in every scenario, but when you support local people, local businesses, that helps build up your community. And when you look, you know, at your belief systems and what our biases are and our dislikes, and if they come from actual things, actual experiences, or just from propagated fear that has been passed down to us, so these are all little things to, you know, a lot of people go to work and, you know, keep their mouth shut and stuff like that. And I'm like that for, I'm able to do that for a short while, but it doesn't last very long. Because I believe that exchanging ideas and, you know, maybe putting out opinions people haven't heard, at least opinions, you know, if somebody turns on the news and all they hear is, you know, this candidate is led the whole time. This candidate's going to win. This candidate's probably going to get the nomination. And that's when all they get from everywhere, when you throw something out, you know, well, I'm voting libertarian or what, you know, it's just, you're throwing a rock at the matrix. You're like, you're creating a bubble there. You're just, when you say things outside of the norm, you know, one of my favorite little things, I take normal sayings that everybody uses and I twist them around a little bit, and just for nothing else, that it makes people stop for a second. You know, I mean, just stupid stuff, but it does. It makes, because your brain gets conditioned to hearing and repeating the same things over and over again. So I try to, even if it's just verbally, turn things on their ear a little bit. It makes things more interesting for me. You know, it kind of helps. You know, people need them, as George Carlin says, people need a mental goose during the day once in a while.
Yes.
Even a blind squirrel catches a nut every once in a while. And I say, even a blind nut catches a squirrel once in a while. You know, just little things, just because you get so conditioned into these phrases. Oh, good morning. Hi, how are you? Fine, how are you? Mm-hmm. It's really nice, isn't it? Would you like some coffee? Sure. You know, I mean, it's, you know, and just, you know, we get into such routines and patterns, we're just on autopilot. We're just, you know, zombies. And I think anything You know, I love being in a room with 20 people and giving a different answer than the other 19.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy doing that. I enjoy being the one.
So, yeah.
I might get crazy looks, but I would be disappointed if I didn't. So.
That's right. That's right. You know, I used to get, it used to irk me when people would say, you know, you don't need to save the world. You just need to be, like you were just saying earlier, it used to irk me in my youth, you know, because I wanted to save the world. I thought it needed some big, huge, sweeping change, you know, and maybe in some ways it does, you know, but I can't do it all by myself. And I don't want to do it by myself anymore. You know, that's not what I feel like I'm here for, you know. I've come to a lot more respect the idea of adding my contribution to a bunch of other contributions and building something beautiful like that, because I can't think of everything. I can't be everything that it's going to take to make those kind of changes. So it actually, it's a relief, you know, to know that I'm part of a community of people. I'm not alone against, you know, the world and have to change it myself. You know, as pompous as that sounds, I couldn't do it anyway, but to have a much better attitude about it, you know, and it's little ways like that, you know, like you said, at work, I work in a very diverse workplace, you know, and so when I see people, no matter who they are, no matter what they look like or whatever, I smile at them, I make eye contact, I make conversation, and they light up, you know. You can see somebody who's kind of just walking with their head down, but they light up when you talk to them. You make that human connection, and I believe we can do that on almost every level with people. You know, we may have some sociopaths out there. We know we do. But almost everybody can be connected with and has that empathy, that compassion, that the commonness, you know. Like I say, we're not all out to kill each other as much as the TV would have us believe that. A lot of us just need to know that we're acknowledged and we're thought about and we, you know, somebody notices us. And that's the beginning of getting our power back, you know, to care about ourselves and care about the world. You know, it's the little things. It is a lot of little things that happen every day. And those of us who are in this world and feel like we need to help make that change, that's within our realm of possibility to do. We can definitely do that. We can be a little bit of an influence for that. You know, speak out on something that you think needs to be said. You know, step out of a comfort zone a little bit and be different. Like you said, be different from the rest of the rest of the homogenized group or whatever, the sheep. But, you know, those sheep are still people. They just haven't been taught that they're not sheep. So that's kind of the mission statement, the whatever it is that we can kind of latch on to is, you know, it's important. Everyone has a contribution to make, you know, and it can be big, it can be little, but we can all make it together. And, you know, if it comes down to facing Uncle Sam in the streets or whatever, you know, I'll be there. I'll be there if I need to, you know. But I'll be there as a voice for peace. I'll be there as a voice for understanding and love. And, you know, I'll take them for the team if I need to. But at least I will go down believing in what I believe in. So I don't know. I don't want to go that way. I would rather, you know, be jet skiing or something exciting like that. But no. But that's the kind of things we should be prepared for, you know, because this life's important, you know, and it's not meant to live in the shadows. It's not meant to live in shyness. It's not meant to live a half life. You know, we need to be involved with both hands, feet, arms, legs, and our whole heart in our lives and be who we're supposed to be. And if I can encourage anybody listening, myself included, to do that, then hey, that's part of why I'm here, you know, and maybe that's part of why I write the books that I do and try to get them out there to people so that they can get a little inspiration maybe, you know, get a little insight into and say, hey, there's somebody else who thinks like I do out there. And that's encouraging to know that, you know, when I look out in the world and I think I see just a bunch of strangers, that we're just friends who haven't met yet. So.
Right. So, I mean, it's like... it's like rethinking the wheel on some level. But I think, you know, I think there are other people, when we speak up and say stuff, I think maybe there are other people who, even though the 8 of the other 9 people in the crowd may not agree with this, there are, you know, there might be that one other person who's like, yeah, why does this candidate get all the media time? Or why does, you know, I wondered if there was other candidates running for president or other places where I could buy stuff that isn't, you know, mega huge mart or whatever. So I think just on that level, that's, we can just get people to maybe think about things that they don't normally think about. I think that's one of the first steps to, just on a local, you know, personal level, that we can do to kind of make changes and kind of restructure. And, you know, vote for who you want to. Don't, to me, voting has always been about voting for the person that I wanted to see in there. If there's two lesser of evils, or if I feel there's two lesser of evils, unless there's a significant difference, to me, voting for someone that I don't want to win is throwing away my vote. Not voting for someone that I want to win that doesn't stand a very good chance. I'm not going to get up happy the day after the election if I voted for the lesser of evil and the lesser of evils won. Dang, I feel good. You know?
Oh, lesser of evils. Yay. Yes.
Right. When I know I'm not going to be happy with the scenario either way, it just seems to me to be more content to, I'm more content to, you know, speak my voice. If everybody doesn't get it, then that's fine. But I'd rather cast my vote how I really mean it and not just, parroting or voting for lesser of evils. I can't get behind that much.
Absolutely. Hey, well, I'd like to read a little bit of my new book. It kind of goes along with what we're saying here.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. So, when the anesthesia wears off, we start to feel the pain. When the veil is lifted from our eyes, the light can burn and sting. So it is when we begin to see things as they are, after the layers of illusion and insulation are removed. We have spent many years turning over control of our lives and our world to others we trusted to fulfill what they said they would. We are just seeing how far removed from us they are, just how wide the gap is between what was promised and what was achieved. And we are beginning to realize that it was our responsibility all along to hold the people in our lives accountable for the promises they made. But this isn't about blame, or broken promises, or feeling betrayed, although those are the initial reactions to discovering our true situation. And this isn't about conspiracy theories or some worldwide agenda, save the oldest human agenda of securing power and control over the masses. It is about where we go from here, how we channel our energy. We can feel like chess pieces on a giant board, tiny gears and wheels in a massive machine, powerless and helpless against the way things are. That is the most important controlling illusion still in place, that we will never come together as one and free ourselves from being used. Attempts to free ourselves from the domination of kings and queens and despots have resulted in bloody revolutions and short-lived freedom. Why? Because until we change who we are at the basic fundamental level, the seeds of future failure are built into our nature. We have abdicated control and responsibility and place others on the seat of power in our lives. We look at the president, the legislatures, the law enforcers, the military, the educators, the media, and the captains of industry to care about and inform us. We know the names of serial killers, but not their victims. We draw our patterns for life from musical performers who put forth the gangster or diva lifestyle as something to emulate. We turn our attention and esteem to celebrities and sports figures that are no more important than the homeless person with the cardboard sign on the corner or the stranger who passes you in the mall. My vision is a world of radically self-empowered people who do not buy into any contract that takes them away their sovereignty or their inherent rights to self-define, and who respect the same right in others. To me, that would be revolution worthy. So that's
Very...
just a sample of what you'll get when that's just a sample of what you'll get when you buy my latest.
No, very, very good, very heartfelt, very moving. Love it.
Yeah.
So tell us, this is your fourth book?
Yes, my fourth book. It's my second As the Crow Flies book. The As the Crow Flies books are basically a collection of social media blog posts that I put together. The difference with this one is I threw some extra material in, and towards the back of it, you'll find my bundle story, my medicine bundle story, which explains the symbolism of my medicine bundle. Since I'm a Native American practitioner, I have a medicine bundle that has certain items in that. So this is the backstory, basically, to that. I wrote it up. It's about 8 pages long, and it's a narrative. You know, it tells the story of the two characters that became the two crows that are in my medicine bundle, and the passage that they make through all the things that they went through. And then there is another little section called Paradigm Shift. And that was going to be another book at one time. I wrote that back about 2003, and I've collected that material together, and it's just a kind of a mini book, kind of a little pamphlet, if you will, about you know, changing yourself from the inside out. It's a common theme in some of my writings. And then there's a kind of a discourse on a philosophy that I came up with around the same time called panphilicism. Panphilicism means it's all love, or everything is love. And that was years before I met our friend Iggy, who that's one of his favorite sayings. It's all love. So it was kind of funny that that's the way that worked out. But it's kind of an offshoot of pantheism, I guess, but it explains the differences in there. And so, you know, it's an interesting book to me because it contains more of me than I've given out before. Some of the earlier stuff, some of the things that people haven't read before and seen before from me. So I'm kind of interested to see how it gets received, but that's those two books. And then the other two books, one of them is a short story, book of short stories that I wrote, about 11 or 12 of those. And the genre is kind of like science fiction with a heart. You know, I don't go into great technical detail in science fiction, and sometimes it's just fantasy, just ordinary people thrown into an extraordinary situation and how they act about it, you know. And I'm probably not the world's greatest writer, but I was inspired by Ray Bradbury and some other writers of short stories and things that but, you know, it's also a part of me that I wanted to share, too. So I put those together. And in there are some stories, too, that I wrote for my children and read in their classes when they were in fifth grade. So that's got that aspect to it, too. And then I've got one other book. It's called The Evolution Within. And that is some essays, probably 23 essays that I wrote about, you know, again, changing yourself from the inside out, being the change in the world. You know, the premise of that was that evolution takes place through mutation. So it's the mutants, it's the freaks, it's the fringe people that drive society forward, that create the change that we need to have in this world. So I was hoping to inspire some people who maybe felt like they were disenfranchised from society to feeling like, no, you are the driving force that changes society. Be yourself, you know, and that's hopefully the message of that book, too. So all those books are available on Amazon.com if you go out there and you search my name. There are other David Rutlands out there. There's even a country band out there called the David Rutland Band. I'm like, really? Wow. But yeah, so just look for my name out there, David Rutland or David Two Crows, and those books will come up. I'm having a website that I'm developing still, so that's not quite there yet, but that would be another place where I would point people when that comes. But yeah, I'll be having some book signings here in town later, probably early September, and I'll be making those books available there. And it's a passion of mine, you know, to write and communicate like that. I love painting word pictures and putting words together to say something profound. I think it's profound anyway. Always have been, kind of entranced by the English language. So it's an excellent tool for me, one way that I find my creative outlet. And I'm just glad people like to read it. So there you go.
Very good. Very good. Okay, well, I think we're at that 89-minute mark, so...
Yeah. Did we solve everything yet, or is there still something left?
I don't know. I think hopefully we showed some steps forward, possibly, for people.
Sure.
So, well, I want to thank you for spending some time with us and sharing a little bit of your books with us. Very enlightening, and enjoyed the conversation as always. And you know, I think the message we both have is, you know, think for yourself.
Absolutely. That's not easy to do nowadays. But yeah, thank you for having me on. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed my time here in the rabbit hole as always. And I will see you out there in the real world. And good night to all our listeners. Much love. Peace.
Caw, caw, two crows.
Okay, thank you, my friend,
thank you.
For joining us. And we will run into you in the real world, which I guess is now called Pokemon Land.
Right. I think there's a Squirtle in my pocket. I don't know.
You know, 5 years ago in my astrology class, right when Neptune was getting ready to go into Pisces, I said the lines between illusion and reality will blur. You will not know what is real and what is not, and you will see crazy stuff like you will never imagine, because that 3D reality was going to get dissolved by the Neptune Pisces energy. Now, I believe that was going to be true. In no way did I did I think that 5 years later I would drive down my street and the human beings dressed in full head-to-toe Pokemon outfits. That was beyond even what I was expecting.
That's reality for you, man. It's always more surprising than you can imagine.
Goodness sakes. I just can't get it.
That's right. So. We live in interesting times indeed. So anyway, much love to you, Mark. Thank you for having me on, and everyone else out there, take care.
Okay. Thank you, my friend. We will chat soon in person. Okay. So that's about going to do it. We're going to be back on Thursday the 28th. And I'm working on a guest, and I just got an email back from them. So this will be the show that gets me in trouble. I'm not going to divulge yet who the guest is going to be, but this will be, you knew it was coming. You knew it was coming at some point, but this is the show that will get me in trouble. So, we'll be back in 2 weeks. I will post who the my next guest will be shortly. Gathering of 1,000 Drummers on the 31st. And everyone, take care.
Blazing saddle, he wore a shining star. justice for all as his aim. Then out of the sun rode a man with a gun, and Bart was his name. Yes, Bart was his name. He rode a blazing saddle. He wore
a... Are you like a crazy person?
I'm quite sure they will say so.